You're listening to event audio from the Brookings Events Podcast, part of the Brookings Podcast Network. For more in-depth analysis and commentary from Brookings scholars and our guests, go to brookings.edu/podcasts or listen via Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Policy Podcasts.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is John Allen. I'm the president of the Brookings Institution. It's a great pleasure to welcome you all this afternoon to the event entitled U.S.-Russia Relations, a conversation with the Russian ambassador, Anatoly Antonov. Throughout the 20th century, the United States and Russia have had a long and a storied relationship, which has at various points balanced elements of cooperation, competition, and even conflict. And despite our differences, from World War II to the aftermath of 9/11, the United States and Russia have indeed found common cause throughout some of the greatest challenges in our recent history. It's worth stating that America, as a nation of immigrants, has benefited from Russian blood that runs thickly in the veins of our people. And our country is better, and our people are better for the immigration of Russians to America. In that sense, even today, the U.S. and Russia continue to share converging interests on issues like arms control, non-proliferation, environmental research in the Arctic, climate change, biomedical research, and public health. The latter is especially important today as the world continues to fight against the COVID-19 pandemic, which continues to afflict over 12 million people worldwide. Yet there is no doubt that recent years have strained the U.S. and Russia bilateral relationship, from New START to ongoing situations in Ukraine and Syria. These issues have raised tensions on both sides and for complex reasons. While difficult, I encourage our participants today, as well as the other experts in the field, to not shy away from acknowledging these hard facts. Rather, I argue that acknowledgement, in fact, is the first step in resolving our differences so that we may continue to work on behalf of ensuring the security and the health and the environment of our shared global community. As an institution dedicated to supporting the public good, Brookings is committed to hosting such essential conversations as the one you'll hear today. For without dialogue, we believe there can be no progress. So it's in that spirit that today we're delighted to host His Excellency, the Ambassador of the Russian Federation to the United States, Anatoly Antonov. Ambassador Antonov has a long and distinguished career as a specialist in nuclear, chemical, and biological weapons in the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. And prior to being named as the ambassador to the United States, Ambassador Antonov served as the first as Deputy Minister of Defense, and then as Deputy Minister of Foreign Affairs, two very important positions in the Russian Federation. Joining the ambassador today is Brookings non-resident senior fellow, Dr. Angela Stent, who is the director of the Center for Eurasian, Russian, and Eastern European Studies, and a professor of government and foreign service at Georgetown University. She is a former national intelligence officer for Russia and Eurasia on the National Intelligence Council. Doctor, welcome. And in addition, we are joined by Brookings senior fellow, Frank Rose. Frank is a former assistant secretary of state for arms control, verification, and compliance, whose portfolio included missile defense, space security, chemical and biological weapons, and conventional arms control. So before I turn the floor over to Frank, who will be moderating today's event, I'd like to quickly remind everyone that we're very much live today and on the record and streaming. Our audience members can submit questions to events@brookings.edu, events.brookings@edu, or via Twitter at hashtag US Russia. So with that, once again, Mr. Ambassador, we're so grateful for your joining us today. And let me turn the floor over to Frank, and we look forward to the conversation that you'll be leading today.
Thank you very much, General Allen, and welcome to today's event. Let me begin by providing you some information on how today's program will proceed. We'll start by asking Ambassador Antonov to provide about 10 or 15 minutes of opening remarks outlining his views on the current state of the overall U.S.-Russia bilateral relationship. Following the ambassador's remarks, we'll have a moderated discussion between myself, Dr. Angela Stent, and the ambassador. Towards the end of the event, we'll take a few questions from the audience. As General Allen mentioned, if you would like to ask a question, viewers can submit their questions by emailing events@brookings.edu or via Twitter using the #USRussia hashtag. On that note, let me turn the floor over to Ambassador Antonov. Ambassador, the floor is yours. Ambassador, you are on mute.
You're muted, sir.
I hope that everything is fine. Again, you said it. It's a pleasure for me to repeat what I have said just only 1 second ago. It's a great honor for me to be with you. You have characterized my remarks as Russian-American relations. Frankly, you said that I have decided to narrow our item for discussion to strategic stability and arms control. But, Frank, it does not mean that I'm not ready to make more wider our discussion. And, of course, I will be very pleased to start such a dialogue. It seems to me that under such circumstances that we face now in Washington, we have a lack of communication between NGO and Russian embassy, between administration and Russian embassy, taking into account current political situation in Washington and in the United States of America. So, Frank, again, you said that I will concentrate on strategic stability issues. And of course, I'm open to any questions from your side, from audience. I'm at your disposal. So the international community is concerned over the state of international system of arms control. We share this concern. Despite Russia's recent new initiatives, today there is no certainty that we will succeed in improving the situation. Even our most straightforward proposal to reaffirm the Reagan-Gorbachev statement that a nuclear war cannot be won and must never be fought has not found support in Washington. I failed to try to persuade my colleagues within these 3 years just only to get confirmation from this administration to this very important signal to international community. Lately, we have been witnessing a further degradation of arms control. Just a few days ago, the United States withdrew from the Open Skies Treaty and put the agreement on the brink of collapse. We also bear in mind the erroneous steps of the current U.S. administration with regard to the INF Treaty, which also ceased to exist. The Russian proposal to declare a moratorium on INF missiles deployment in regions of the world have not received any positive reaction yet. Special focus is on Europe and the Asia-Pacific region. The situation around the CTBT is complicated as well. We see that the United States does not intend to ratify the treaty, at least for now. It's clear that other major countries on which CTBT's entry into force depends watch the U.S. closely and wait for the administration to make its move. Today, the question before us is whether we will be able to save the arms control system together. With the necessary consent, will we manage to adapt the system to current challenges and threats or abandon multilateral mechanism that determines strategic stability and predictability? Will we build relations on the basis of equality or give up and submit to the will of one state? Russia's position on arms control is consistent. We have always advocated for strong, peaceful, and stable international relations, maintaining strategic stability enhances every country's national security. I'm sure that, like Russia, every state is interested in mutual predictability and military risk reduction. We do not support the idea of creating so-called islands of stability, areas of countries with excess threatening military potentials, especially at the expense of defense capabilities of other states. Over the recent years, we have repeatedly reached out to NATO countries, first of all, to the United States, with proposals to engage in serious substantial efforts on strengthening strategic stability. Our proposals have never taken the form of ultimatums. Those have always been invitations to a dialogue aimed at reaching mutually acceptable, equitable agreements which would address concerns of every member of the international community. An effective architecture of international arms control can be restored only on the basis of indivisible security and parity. Our approaches to potential agreements may be different, but I believe that the inspiration to preserve peace is what we share. In this context, the fate of New START is perhaps the key issue for future arms control. No one has ever said that the treaty is perfect. We managed to cover many issues in New START, but there are still problems that require further discussion. The agreements enshrined in the treaty were the maximum that Russia and the United States could reach at the time it was signed 11 years ago. All these years, neither the United States, nor Russia, nor the international community criticized New START. Many call it the gold standard of arms control agreements. It's only in the last few months when our American colleagues have suddenly found some aspects of the treaty detrimental to the U.S. national security. We have never made a secret of our desire to save New START. Not to secure some pseudo-advantage, but to prevent Russian-United States relations in the area of strategic security from collapsing. We need time to work out new agreements that would address the new security threats and challenges emerged in recent years. That is why, as early as last December, Russia officially proposed to the United States to extend New START without any preconditions. In doing so, we put aside our concerns, which we repeatedly raised with our American colleagues about certain procedures the United States used to fulfill its treaty obligations. For quite a while, we could not secure the consent of the United States to resume a serious dialogue. In fact, we succeeded in reestablishing contacts with only in the lead up to the U.S. presidential elections. As a result, we are running out of time to extend New START, as it will expire on February the 5th, 2021. After difficult consultations with our American colleagues, 2 months ago, Russia announced its readiness to meet Washington halfway on two key issues. In particular, we agreed to a one-year extension of the treaty, while our preference is a five-year term, and to freeze one of the party's nuclear warheads for the mentioned period. Moscow expressed its willingness to formalize this in a form of politically binding framework agreement. We stress that Washington should not put forward any additional conditions. We assume that in the negotiations that would follow the New START extension, the two sides would have an opportunity to reach agreements on missile defense, ground-based intermediate and shorter-range missiles, global strike systems, hypersonic delivery vehicles, future space weapons, and other factors causing serious national security concerns for Russia. However, the administration has not shared our approach and within the framework of agreement, tried to get us to agree on the inclusion of a harsh Cold War era verification regime of the freeze and the development of some definitions of the subject of the future treaties. That is to say, to get ahead of the results of the potential negotiations. I recall the time 11 years ago when a distinguished Ms. Rose Guttermüller and our delegation started the negotiations. Back then, the American colleagues talked about the redundancy of the previous START 1 verification mechanism. They proposed to move away from the Cold War stereotypes. They sought to convince us of the need to streamline verification procedures. And we agreed to that. Today, the treaty provides the necessary level of transparency and the most important, predictability. The United States and Russia receive information on the current state of each other's strategic nuclear forces. We have carried out hundreds of on-site inspections. We have also exchanged tens of thousands of notifications. All this within the framework of the new START verification mechanism. An important result of the implementation of the treaty is that the parties have reached the agreed limits for deployed strategic offensive weapons. The total number of deployed warheads has been cut by one third. The number of deployed and non-deployed delivery vehicles has reduced by more than half. Thus, a new START has confirmed its key role in strengthening strategic stability and mutual trust. In addition to serving the United States and Russian national security goals, it signals to the world that our two countries are serious in their efforts to strengthen global peace and security. Finally, the agreement is a significant contribution of the two great powers to the implementation of the well-known Article 6 of the NPT. It's important to emphasize here that our country needs new START as much as the United States does. Russia is a predictable nuclear power. Under no circumstances we are going to engage in arms race that we are openly threatened with. We play responsibly our role of a guarantor of international security and will do everything necessary to preserve strategic stability. First of all, to ensure defense of the Russian state even in the absence of the treaty. Today, there are a lot of debates about better formats of potential arms control agreements. There are frequent calls in the United States to involve China. Our priority is to engage the United Kingdom and France in the arms control negotiations. They are members of NATO. NATO is an organization that positions itself as a nuclear alliance. That's why we cannot ignore the nuclear weapons capabilities of London and Paris. I would like to stress that we are open to a multilateral dialogue. At the same time, we believe that forcing anyone to participate in such discussions is a counterproductive approach. Any negotiation should result in enhanced national security of all countries and lower levels of their weapon arsenals. As to us, we are ready for such work. Thank you very much.
Great. Mr. Ambassador, thanks for that overview of the strategic stability set of issues. And let me come back to you on the future of New START. You know, one of the biggest challenges the United States and Russia face with regards to New START is the treaty is scheduled to expire on February 5th, 2021. So that's less than 2 months. Do you think there's enough time to extend the treaty before then? Number one. Number two, are you still having discussions with the Trump administration currently about extending the treaty? Or do you think discussions about extension will have to wait until Vice President-elect Biden takes office on January 20th. So I'd be interested in your thoughts. Do you think we have time to make it happen?
Frank, we have time. You said that we can get it very quickly. You said that if anybody can call me now from State Department or White House, I'm ready to come. I'm ready to continue such negotiations. Moreover, we have excellent team in Moscow. I know the majority of them because at least 50% of that team was with me 11 years ago when we started negotiations on this treaty. It's my first my answer to your first question. As to a second question, yes, we are in close contact with Marshall Billingsley, who is a key negotiator from American side. We have exchanged our thoughts, our ideas on this issue. As to me, Frank, you know that I prefer to speak privately. I prefer to speak directly to American negotiators without mass media, and with due respect, without NGO participation. I'm ready to sell NGO the result of our dialogue, the results of our potential negotiations. That's why what I can say now that we are still in dialogue, or we hope that we will continue it for a foreseeable future.
Great. And let me follow up on that question. So let's assume all the pieces fall into place and we extend the New START treaty. As I like to say, then the hard work begins. And you talked about that in your opening remarks, bringing in third parties like Britain, France, and China, but also integrating new technologies like anti-satellite weapons, cyber capabilities, hypersonic capabilities. How do we move to the next step after New START? Does Russia have a preferred format? For example, could we use the P5 process? Should we have trilateral talks? I'd be interested in your thoughts about next steps.
Frank, you have raised so many questions, very important questions. I just would like to recall what happened 11 years ago when we started negotiations with the previous administration. And what I would like to say, that there was a lot of questions regarding new technology, regarding missile defense, regarding strategic offensive arms in non-nuclear configuration, regarding a disbalance in conventional arms, and many, many other issues. And we failed to find an answer to all questions. And there was a decision in the end of that round of negotiation that we would continue discussion with American colleagues. You said that it was my proposal during the final session of our meeting in Geneva. I offered my American friends, let's not leave Geneva for Washington and Moscow. Let's continue discussion because you see our delegation. You know our faces. You know who we are. And we also have established very good practical, pragmatic relations with your team. Let's continue because all issues we failed to cover all of them. The situation is the same. We have in the beginning to identify what should be in the focus of the future negotiations. Why we have proposed American side to extend for 5 years. We consider that next round of negotiations will be very difficult because we have to take on board many issues that you raised. But Frank, you understand that we have our own concerns and we also would like them to put on the paper. So it will be very difficult to identify what kind of issues will be on the top of our agenda. Then we will decide what would we do with the rest that could not be included in next new START treaty. I don't know how to call potential new agreement. So it will be very difficult negotiations. It's not possible to deal with this issue online, or it's not possible to see each other just only once per month. It's necessary to work 24 hours per day. You see that? And our delegation have to be stationed in any third country. I don't know whether it will be Austria or Geneva or other state, but we have to start. As to format, you see that we are open. We understand that United States would like to involve China. As to us, you said, we understand that at this juncture, the Chinese colleagues are not happy with such invitation, and they are reluctant to support it. Moreover, official representative of Chinese Minister of Foreign Affairs of China has mentioned many times that China is not ready to become a partner for such negotiations. And by the way, Frank, I will reveal a little bit some substance of our discussions with this administration. I raised a question many times to my colleagues. What do we want from China? Do we want to invite China to get the same ceilings that United States and Russia have now, or the United States and Russia are ready to reduce a quantity of warheads and nuclear and delivery vehicles to the level that China has now? There was no any answer from my American friends on this issue. So you see how potential conversation will be complicated. So that's why you see that it would be more prudent if we make first step, extend START treaty, and then sit together and let's identify what we want to put on a potential treaty papers.
Great. Well, on that note, we have our colleague Angela Stent, who is back. I think she had some internet issues. And as I always like to say, if you really want to understand post-Cold War U.S.-Russian relations, you need to read Dr. Stent's book, The Limits of Partnership. I highly recommend it. And Angela, I'll take my commission after the event. So on that note, Angela, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Frank. Good afternoon, Ambassador Antonov. I apologize. I somehow lost the internet, but hopefully I'm back now for the rest of the time. So I wanted to ask you a broader question about the U.S.-Russian relationship, moving away from the arms control, which is obviously the most important part of it. But as you know, every American administration, new one, seems to come into office determined to pursue a reset with Russia. And I wanted to ask you from the Russian point of view, if you believed that it was the right thing to do to pursue a reset, how would you go about doing that? What would your priorities be?
Very difficult issue. And frankly, you see that I would like to say to you that I'm a little bit upset before our meeting because my minister counselor has just returned back from State Department. Maybe it's difficult to understand how it is important for us, but the most sensitive issue for us is now visa issue. There is a great problem for us. We cannot extend visa for our doctor. We cannot get a visa for children that are born in Russian diplomats' families. We cannot extend visa for our diplomats who are working here. You said that, frankly, I'm very much disappointed. And based on my assumption, you said that, of course, it's rather difficult to think about the future. As to us, we would like to have pragmatic relations, friendly relations with the United States. We are two great powers. We are permanent members of Security Council. We bear a special responsibility for international stability and peace. That's why you see that, could I say in English in such way, we are doomed for cooperation. Because the whole world depends upon the relations between United States and Russia. And just only maybe a few guys who are happy to see current shape of Russian-American relations. I understand that it would be very difficult to restart dialogue between the United States and Russia. By the way, we didn't stop this dialogue, even under such circumstances, when when current administration seized Russian properties, expelled a lot of Russian diplomats, blaming us for many events that we are not responsible for, we are still in a good mood. We are still in favor to develop our relations. What should I do? And it's not a secret. You see that I would like to use all positive elements that we have before, where we had before and we have now. And in the core of our relations would be strategic stability issues. The problem of arms control, the problem of non-proliferation. You see that we are together on this issue. We have to fight together against terrorism. Anywhere, whether it is in Latin America or in Middle East, whether it is in Asia or other countries. We have excellent relations on space issues. And we can continue. You see that I see today progress made by our Chinese friends, and I would like to welcome such achievements. And I am sure that we have excellent prospects with the United States to develop such cooperation. And of course, I cannot ignore, and I would like to emphasize that we need cooperation to fight COVID-19 pandemic. Just only a few months ago, our scientists signed a memorandum of cooperation. It seems to me that we shouldn't try to launch competition on this issue. We should unite our efforts. You see that if we have a vaccine that could protect Americans, we are ready to share with you. And today, by the way, we have made a presentation in UN on this issue. And we would like to welcome our American friends to work together on these issues. So I'm not talking about culture. I'm not talking about Russian belly. You see that I like it very much, and I have seen many times how American audience applauded Russian artists who came from Moscow. And you see that I have a very old joke. Sometimes it's difficult to translate, but I said that it's enough to have a belly, and maybe we don't need any missile. You see that just only to see your smile and to continue our cooperation.
Angela, you're muted.
So certainly culture is one area where U.S.-Russian relations have always thrived, irrespective of the political relationship. I want to ask you about one other area where the United States and Russia have cooperated, where we also compete, but it's an area where there's a lot of focus at the moment, and that's the Arctic. What do you see going forward as prospects for cooperation there in the Arctic?
It's a very important issue, and if you permit me, I will take a few minutes just only to answer to you, because I see that Arctic is a zone of friendship and cooperation between the United States and Russia. I can say right away that we are against any competition in high latitudes. We oppose the focus on the securitization of the region, which substitutes the agenda of sustainable development of the far north and strengthening partnership mechanism. We support the principle of pragmatism in cooperation in the Arctic, including in bilateral relations. We note the need for joint active work to address the problems of the Arctic. Our country our country's special attention to the Arctic arises from the natural forces. Russia has significant territories in the north, and today it produces more than 10% of domestic GDP and more than 20% of exports. From our perspective, prospects for economic growth in the years ahead are connected with the rich resource base and transport potential of the Arctic. The updated strategy for the development of the Russian Federation Arctic zone is ensuring national security through to 2035. Just only a few months ago, in October, my president has signed our strategy on this issue. We put special emphasis on the efforts to maintain a balance between economic development and preservation of the fragile and unique ecosystem of North. We also intend to base the priorities of Russian chairmanship in the Arctic Council in 2021-2023 on the task of supporting a constructive agenda and harmonized and sustainable development of the North. I already have met with my colleagues from State Department who are responsible for this issue. It was my first discussion with them. And I would like to say to you that we have a huge agenda for a potential cooperation between the United States and Russia. It's up to us, it's up to Washington to decide whether this issue is ripe for cooperation or not. You see that we will be waiting any reaction from your side. Thank you.
Thank you. And now I'm going to ask you a question, which I know all of our viewers and listeners are very curious to hear the answer to, is, and that is, when could we expect President Putin to acknowledge that Joe Biden is going to be the next president of the United States?
You see that I can just only smile to this question. I hope that you understand that how I have to be cautious on this issue. First, I'm not working in Kremlin. You said that I am not in close contact with Mr. Putin. But of course, I am aware of the position of Russian Federation on this issue. We consider that it's American people decides itself who will run this country. We will recognize any choice that your people makes. And as I understand that we need to weigh some legal procedures in your country when all official results will be announced. And it goes without saying that after this moment or this event, you say that everything will be done in accordance with the protocol, state protocol.
So maybe we expect December 14th when the Electoral College will announce its the results.
You said that I live in real life today, the 2nd of December. It's all what I can say on this issue.
All right. Thank you very much. Back to you, Frank.
Thanks so much, Angela. Ambassador, can we come back to the strategic stability portfolio and talk about one of the issues that is near and dear to both of our hearts, and that's missile defense, something that you and I worked on very closely during the Obama administration. Now, in the past, Russia has demanded that the United States provide it legally binding guarantees that U.S. missile defenses would not undermine Russian strategic deterrent. Now, the U.S. has consistently rejected these requests. Now, I'd be interested, in your view, is it possible for the United States and Russia to agree on further nuclear reductions, including limitations on non-strategic weapons, absent reaching some type of agreement on missile defenses?
Frank, you have raised two questions. First, missile defense. It's a very complicated issue. It was on the core during our negotiations with the American team when we negotiated START treaty. As you remember, and I hope that everybody is aware, that nexus between strategic offensive arms and strategic defensive arms was fixed in this treaty. Of course, I know that 90% of Americans are legal experts, and now they consider that this nexus that I have characterized is not a part of legally binding document that was endorsed by your Senate. But we have different view. I hope that you remember history of the United States. I'm sure that you know Mr. McNamara, your former Secretary of Defense, his famous speech in San Francisco, when the first time he introduced an idea of a nexus between strategic offensive arms and strategic defensive arms. And at that time, during a few years, we rejected such a nexus. But then we were persuaded by American side that there is the reality, this is a real life, and we cannot reduce the quantity of missiles and warheads without looking at missile defense. By the way, I remember my negotiations with former Undersecretary of Defense Jim Miller. I hope that you know this person. You said that we conducted a few rounds of consultations on missile defense, and we were very close to find a compromise. And to my regret, in 2014 or 2015, you see that we stopped these negotiations because of events on the territory of the former Soviet Union. So you see that as to us, we are keen to restart such dialogue. And I'm sure if there is a political will in Washington, we can find find solution on this issue. As to non-strategic nuclear weapons, what can I say to you? You said that we shouldn't prejudge what will be on the focus, what will be a subject of a potential agreement between United States and the Russian Federation. As to us, you said that we would like to concentrate on strategic offensive arms. And we would like, frankly, you said that I don't understand logic of current administration. Why this administration decided to forget about delivery systems? You said that it's like a gun and a bullet. You can take all bullets outside of this room and to keep them in stocks, but there will be no damage to your security without gun. So you said that you will be necessary to use a special gun to send bullet to direction that you want to do. For me, it's clear that next treaty should consist of some ceilings, some understandings and arrangements regarding warheads and regarding strategic delivery systems for these warheads. What kind of warheads? I hope that our negotiating team will decide. I cannot exclude today anything. We can discuss all issues. And Frank, each side has a right to raise any question of its concern. It's up to us to come to a conclusion whether there is a base for compromise on one issue or another one, or we should to put such issues aside. Maybe to wait for a while.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Ambassador. We're coming to the last 15 minutes of our event, so I'd like to take a few questions from the audience. The first question I have deals with U.S.-Russia cooperation on non-proliferation, specifically whether the U.S. will seek to rejoin the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action with Iran. Be interested in your thoughts whether, from Russia's perspective, you would welcome the United States rejoining the JCPOA. And secondly, your thoughts on how the United States and Russia might work together on non-proliferation more generally.
JCPOA. It goes without saying that we welcome the potential decision of the United States to return back to this deal. Moreover, don't forget that this deal was endorsed by UN Security Council resolution. We have, again, a different perception whether there is a legally binding document or it's just only politically binding document, taking into account resolution of UN Security Council. Please, I would like you to understand me. So that's why you see that we will be waiting your decision regarding a cooperation in the framework of JCPOA. So as to non-proliferation, as to me, Frank, you know that I'm in favor of such cooperation. We have excellent record of our cooperation in non-proliferation. Sometimes you see that my colleagues raised one question, whether we have identical views on non-proliferation issues or not. And my answer, maybe it will be very interesting for you to hear it the first time. I consider that our strategical perception is the same. We would like to see non-proliferation treaty as it is. We don't want to permit anybody to destroy this treaty. We can create a lot of arrangements around NPT to increase non-proliferation net, security net. And we did a lot of, and we know about initiatives introduced by the United States, by administration, where you work, where we work together with you. So that's why you see that it's, again, you see that we are open and we are ready to continue such cooperation. We have such cooperation now, by the way, with the current administration. But as to me, I would like to see more, especially our cooperation in the framework of P5. The P5, because this year there was a decision to delay NPT review conference. I hope that next year we could organize it. I don't know what kind of situation we will face with the COVID-19 pandemia. But I hope that we will sit together and we will work together. It's a great pleasure for me to work with you in the NPT framework. It's a great pleasure to work with you on non-proliferation issues.
Great. Well, we just can't get away from arms control. I have another question here about the future of conventional arms control in Europe. As you know, Russia remains a party to the CFE treaty, but has suspended their implementation. The United States has officially withdrawn from the Open Skies Treaty. What, from your perspective, is the future of conventional arms control in Europe? What would you do with regards to next steps?
It's a very interesting question, you see that, Frank. I remember those days when my president decided to freeze Russian participation and CFE. But it seems to me that you don't remember that we decided to freeze our participation in former CFE, but we are still an adapted CFE treaty. And I remember a message, the message that I sent to all member countries at the time. I was a director on disarmament, saying that, guys, we are ready to welcome you in adapted CFE, But as you know, because of Transnistria and problems regarding Georgia, we failed to put into force adapted CFE treaty. On Open Skies Treaty, frankly, I know concerns introduced by United States regarding Russian implementation of this treaty. We did the same. I'm a little bit surprised, Frank, why nobody from Western countries decided to withdraw from the treaty, why they decided not to follow suit of the United States. It means that they are sure that all problems possible to solve in the framework of a special commission that we have in Vienna. You said that. And the situation regarding Open Skies Treaty is very much complicated. We are very much concerned that some members of NATO countries could convey data received from flights of Open Sky Treaties planes and to convey them to the United States. And we hope that everybody who is still binded by this document will stick to its obligation under this treaty. The main problem that we face now, it's a mistrust. Mistrust between European countries, Western European countries, and the United States. We have to restore mistrust. We should find ways how to make the gap of misunderstanding more narrow. As to us, we have introduced a lot of ideas regarding the transparency measure, confidence building measures in the European continent. But to our regret, you said that NATO countries rejected them. I remember 2015 when I worked in Ministry of Defense. Those days, we sent a special delegations of generals to NATO to introduce some proposal of cooperation. I remember those proposals regarding confidence building measures, but they were rejected. You remember, I hope, Finnish president initiative regarding the flight of military planes over Baltic Sea. You said that as to Russia, we have decided to meet concern of Finnish colleagues, but it was reluctance from NATO countries to switch on transponders on the planes that are flying over Baltic Sea. So my answer to you is very simple one. We have not to impose additional restrictions on conventional arms in Europe. We have to think about confidence building measures. We would like to urge the United States, European countries, to look at Russian proposals and at least to try to find anything interesting for you. It's impossible to say that everything that was proposed by Russia is a negative and everything what is offering to Russia is excellent. You say that we need to find balance. We need to find balance. We are ready for such discussions in Vienna.
Great. Well, we're coming to the end of our time, but I think we have time for one more question. I'm going to try to end on a positive note here. Ambassador, you've talked about the number of pressing issues of concern in the U.S.-Russian relationship. And I would argue that it will be important to build on early success in that relationship. That said, where would you suggest that we have bilaterally the best chance of coming to an agreement on to which to build? I assume New START would be at the top of your list, but are there other near-term areas where the United States and Russia early on in a new administration could reach a win-win solution and build a good foundation for trust moving forward?
Frank, I have mentioned some of them today already. Strategic stability, non-proliferation, space cooperation, fight against terrorism. It seems to me that we have to fight against terrorism together, to fight against COVID-19 pandemia. You see that at least it's five elements that I see now on which we can create a good base or expand maybe current base of cooperation between the United States and Russia. We need to restore channels of communication. You see that I'm dreaming to see Minister of Foreign Affairs of Russian Federation and Minister of Defense of Russian Federation to come to Washington in order to restore channel 2+2. It's excellent channel to exchange views on various issues. everybody can raise any issue of interest, but at the same time, we can restart it and we can find a more wider base for a potential cooperation between the United States and Russia.
Well, we do have 5 minutes left. Let me go back to Dr. Stent. Any closing questions or comments you'd like to close with?
I would actually like to go back to Ambassador Antonov talked about the P5. We know that President Putin had talked about convening the P5 this year. It was impossible, obviously, because of COVID. Let's say that there is a possibility next year, maybe next September, to convene such a meeting. What do you think the most important issues there would be on the table?
Thank you very much for your assistance. It goes without saying that Russian initiative to convene P5 summit will be very important. Could you imagine that five leaders of great powers will sit together? And let's imagine how many differences they have, but they will restart talking to each other, not blaming, but trying to find a compromise. As to us, we have introduced a broad agenda of potential dialogue, not dialogue, it will be consultations, yes, consultations between P5 members. And we consider we shouldn't focus just only, for example, on arms control. No, our agenda is more wider. And each state has its own right to flag the most sensitive and important issue for this country or another one. Another issue of potential cooperation, by the way, Frank, and answering to your question, it's cooperation in information technology sphere. You see that Russian president has introduced the whole program how to restore cooperation or dialogue between the United States and Russia on this issue. And of course, this issue, I'm sure, will be on the table of discussions between our presidents. I consider that everybody is waiting such meeting. It will be very important for our leaders to sit together and to understand what kind of joint problems embraced us and what should we do together to save this world. Or maybe not to save, but to make this world more safer.
And on that note, I think we have reached the end of our time. On behalf of the Brookings Institution, let me thank Ambassador Antonov for joining us for this very interesting and insightful discussion. And let me also thank my colleague, Dr. Angela Stent, for joining us today. Again, thank you so much to the audience and have a nice evening. Goodbye.
It's very kind. Thank you. It's great honor. Thank you. It's very interesting. Thank you.